I like to reframe it as, wow, I can really feel like I got a hard workout without doing too much.
How many pets do you have, would you say?
I currently oversee, I manage mm-hmm. a flock mm-hmm. of 13 animals.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I just think academia is very pretentious. Sorry, that's a popular thing to say.
I'm like, isn't one of your parents a professor?
Mm-hmm, yeah, I was raised by professors, yeah.
So maybe there's something there?
Yeah, no, 3 out of 4 of my parents have worked as professors.
Wow. Clearly our noses are suffering. We did not plan this.
I guess this too is science, question mark. Because it's hard to be a person with a body these days when bonkers TikTok diets are all the rage. And why are the seats so damn small on the airplane? Because it's hard to be a person with a body these days. You're listening to Burnt Toast. I'm Virginia Soul Smith.
And I'm Corinne Fay.
And today we are just catching you up on some general January news, things that are happening in our lives and the world. And then we're going to answer a few listener questions.
Yay!
I'm excited to talk about all these things.
I know, this is kind of my favorite type of episode.
Yeah, so. When it's like a little bit random. Yeah. Do you want to go first? Do you have an update for us? Some news?
One thing that I've been dying to ask you and I've kind of been holding back on is...
Oh, boy.
Have you watched Heated Rivalry?
I haven't watched it.
Okay. But you know what I'm talking about?
I'm going to Google it real quick.
Oh, my God. No, don't even Google it. I'm just like, what are you... This is what you need to do this weekend. Well, do you have a kid-free weekend? Because it's not kid-friendly.
It's a sports thing.
There is so little sports. Let me just tell you. If you're watching it for the sports, there's no sports.
Okay.
If the camera was... 1 inch lower, it would be porn.
Oh, okay.
It's based on like romance novels, gay romance novels.
Oh, it's the gay hockey players.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You all gotta watch it.
You're
gonna
like it.
I think you're
gonna
like it. Okay. And I think Jack will like it as well. So I would recommend you watch it together.
Obviously, yeah.
It's very, very horny. It's like whoa. And I will say, like, I started watching it. I watched, like, half of the first episode, and I was like, I don't think this is for me. Mm-hmm. And then it was, like, popping off on the internet, and I was like, I gotta give it another try. And now I'm, like, obsessed with Connor's story.
So, okay, is it, like, you're watching it because it's so absurd, or are you invested in the characters?
I'm invested.
You're invested. Okay.
It's like, it's just like a romance novel, you know? I mean, but it's like, they're both, like, you know, different kind of, like, sports tropes, like one of them's kind of like a tough guy from Russia and the other one's like a little softy Canadian. Mm-hmm. It's just very like sweet, and I think the actors have like a lot of chemistry and you like see their butts a lot, so
okay
yeah,
well I'm in. We'll watch this weekend. Yeah, I mean, I have read many a gay hockey player romance novel.
Oh, then you've probably read the novels.
I may have read the novels this is based on, yeah. It's an excellent genre. I don't like hockey. I have to say, I'm never going to be a pick-me girl for hockey. It's a confusing sport to me.
There's, like, basically no hockey. Having watched the whole thing, I could tell you nothing about hockey.
I've learned
there's, like,
nothing
a cup that you can win. That's all I know.
Oh, yeah, I think... I want to call it a Stanley Cup, but isn't that the water bottles? Or is it also a hockey Stanley Cup?
I don't know, Virginia. Okay. And I don't care. Gay hockey forever.
Delightful. This is an amazing update. We are actually watching the second season of Bad Sisters on your recommendation.
Good one.
So we do have to finish that up, but we're almost done. It is really good. I didn't think they could pull off a good second season, but they really are delivering. So that's great. And then with my parenting life, I'm continuing to work through Buffy the Vampire Slayer with my 12-year-old. It's a delight. I really do feel like you maybe need to consider a Buffy watch at some point.
Okay. Next time I have, like, you know,
47
hours. Two unscheduled weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you could chip away at it, too.
Where do you stream it?
It's on Disney Plus.
Okay.
You probably don't have Disney Plus.
I do not have Disney Plus.
Don't have children. It's not something you need in your life.
My bad. Yeah, did not know.
Fair. It's been very fun. We're in season 4 now for the Buffy fans in the audience, and it's going to start getting a little more violent. I have to feel it out, but I think we're at the point of no return, so.
All right.
We're going to ride that train. That's a good TV update. Have you been reading anything good? I read a book that I think you liked, and I don't think I liked it, but I think I'm in the minority.
Ooh, what book?
Heart the Lover by Lily King.
Oh, my God. You didn't like it?
No. What am I missing?
What didn't you like?
I felt like they were all so annoying and pretentious. Is it because I was an English major, so I don't think I like English majors? Like,
maybe.
We're pretty annoying. All the literary references, like, okay, we get it. You are boys who read books. I was just like, why would you sleep with either one of them? I don't get it.
Oh, fascinating. I mean, I was just sobbing for, like, the entire second half.
It does get sad in the second half, but I think I didn't like him, so I didn't care.
Yeah, you weren't invested.
It's not hard to get me invested in a health journey of some sort. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone. But, yeah, okay. Spoiler alert, we're going to talk about it with spoilers so that we can really get into it. If you didn't read that book and you want to, skip ahead about a minute and a half. Okay. I thought it was real weird that she gave a kid up for adoption and then was just like, but I know she's fine. It's fine. It's all fine. And then she was so worried about the kid she did have who had health issues. She was like, of course she was. But she had just like mentally been like, nope, that one's fine. I picked good people. They had a nice photo. So I know she's having a great childhood. That was really weird to me.
I mean, I felt like that seemed like the decision of like a young, stressed out person.
Yeah, maybe. It's like a trauma response.
A questionable young person decision. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. But it felt weird that she would never reflect further upon it as she got into her own motherhood. I'm not saying she was wrong to give the baby up for adoption. I also think abortion exists, and that would have made sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not saying she should have kept the child. But I just was like, it doesn't feel like you wouldn't have gotten any more nuanced in your feelings about it as the years went on.
The book is her getting more nuanced about it, right?
Not really. Not about the baby. She's like, yeah, she's fine. I mean, she finally tells him about it, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think she was kind of in denial about it or just avoiding it. And then the book is her kind of coming to terms with it.
I just felt like everyone was pretentious and unlikable. And it feels like everyone loves this book so much, and I don't know what I missed.
Have you read her other books?
No, this was my first Lily King.
Okay. Because there's also like a connection to one of the other books.
Well, I'm not going to read it because I didn't like any of these people.
Okay.
Corinne loved it, guys. So
I did love it.
If you've read it, let us know in the comments. I was just surprised. This is the first time I've ever not liked one of your book recs.
Yeah, I am a little surprised. But I think maybe I'm primed to like those kind of like college academic group of kids book. I feel like that's like a genre I
like. You really like. I think it's a genre I don't like. I think I actively dislike reading about people in college.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm not, like, looking back fondly on my own experience of that time.
Yeah.
But I think I just, like, enjoy the dynamics. Did you read A Secret History?
No.
I love that book, so I feel like maybe it was tapping into that.
Yeah, I think I just think academia is very pretentious. Sorry, that's a popular thing to say.
I'm like, isn't one of your parents a professor?
Yeah, I was raised by professors, yeah.
So maybe there's something there?
Yeah, no. 3 out of 4 of my parents have worked as professors.
Okay, well, none of mine have, so.
I grew up in academia. I am now reading the Stoneyard Devotional by Charlotte Wood, and it's about this woman who's sort of lost in her life and moves into a convent. And I keep thinking Corinne would really like this book.
It does sound good to me.
Yeah, I don't know if I like it, but I do think you would really like it. I am enjoying it. Like, usually I'm a big do not finisher if I don't like a book. And I will say Heart the Lover was a snappy read, so I kept going. Because I was like, well, Corinne loved this book, so I'll keep reading to find out when I'll love it. It was the best read. And this one, too, is like a pretty... I'm moving through it quickly, but I think I do need to really root for the characters.
That's funny. I have a conversation like this a lot with my mom because she doesn't like books where the characters are, like, too flawed, is how we always say it. If she doesn't like them, she doesn't want to read it.
I am okay with flawed, but they have to be flawed and likable.
Yeah, they have to have, like, redeeming qualities.
Yeah, and maybe aware of their flawedness in an interesting way. I don't know. I don't need them to be, like, good people. Because, like, that Road to Tender Hearts book I recommended is about a very flawed protagonist.
Mm.
But he's incredibly endearing. Somehow that worked. And in these two books, I'm not finding anyone that endearing, but they are interesting.
All right. I'm also extremely curious to hear about your 30-day strength challenge.
Okay. So despite the fact that in our New Year's Day episode, it was all about fitness stuff, I was like, we're not doing any January fitness challenges. 3 days later, I was like, oh, I'm doing a fitness challenge. It is friend of the show, beloved podcast guest, Anna Maltby, who writes the How to Move fitness newsletter, has a 30-day strength training challenge going on this month. And I saw it, and I love Anna, but I wasn't going to do it because I was just like, oh, I'm not going to do that. And then my friend Mary texted a bunch of us and was like, I really want to do the strength training challenge. Who's in? And I was like, oh, all right, sure, I'll do it with you. And it's very fun. It's getting me to do weights 3 times a week. Mm. I was previously doing it 2x a week. Oh, let me pause and say, we're going to talk some specifics on weights. If you don't want to hear numbers, man, I'm just getting people to fast forward through this whole episode. We're done with book spoilers, but we might mention weight numbers. So if you don't want that, skip ahead again.
And just to clarify, weight lifting numbers, not body weight numbers.
No. This has nothing to do with body weight. I am not doing this to lose weight. I am doing this to support my friend who wants to do the challenge. And because I kind of liked the idea of seeing what it would feel like to increase my weight training for a month.
Mm.
Just, I was like, oh, I wonder what that would be like.
So my question is, it's a 30-day challenge, but you're not doing strength workouts every day for 30 days.
No. Anna makes her programs very customizable, so you could really just do nothing. I mean, you could do one workout a week and be like, this is my 30-day challenge. Like, she lets you make your own plan. She has a suggested schedule, which is 6 workouts a week, but only 3 of them are weights. It's 3 days of weights, 2 days of cardio, and then a Pilates day.
Mm.
I don't have that much time in my calendar, so I'm aiming for 3 days of weights, a Pilates day, and a day of cardio. My goals with it are, is this helping me reliably carve out a few more workout windows in my week, try out days when I wouldn't normally do a workout? Does it make sense with the schedule? If so, when I'm done with this challenge, then I'll reflect on, like, do I want to keep this schedule? Do I want to go back to 2 days of weights and do a little more cardio? You know, I'm kind of just using it as a see how it feels to do more weights, but also just like see how it feels to do more movement and then think about what kind of movement I think I want.
Cool.
Yeah. It's been fun so far. I did print out the little calendar and write down my plan, and I've been giving myself little stickers. So we love that.
Sounds fun.
I'm only a week into it at this point, so it could all fall apart. I think Anna's so good at creating challenges that aren't about losing weight. She says this is more prescriptive than her usual work. She is encouraging you to make a schedule and stick to a schedule, like give yourself some accountability, which I think can be interesting. She really wants people also to feel empowered to develop weightlifting workouts they do on their own, not with the aid of a video.
Okay.
I love you, Anna, but I'm not going to do that. I just want you to tell me what to do all the time.
Totally. Yeah.
I don't want fitness mental load, but I am following her advice to keep track of how much weight I'm lifting and then to see over the course of the month if I can increase that weight.
Yeah.
There's some moves that right now I only use like a 10 or 15. Like, can we go up to 20? We'll see.
Cool. I spoke to someone else who's doing this challenge and they were very sore.
Yeah, I'm pretty sore. Yesterday we did a weights workout. And there was one move that required bands, and we didn't have bands. It was actually two of my friends came to do it with me. So we substituted side planks for those moves, and it turned out to be quite a lot of side planks. And my obliques are real unhappy. But, you know, it's like the good kind of sore where you're like, oh, I did a thing. Yay. What about you? How's powerlifting going these days?
It's going good. I kind of haven't been going very much because it was just December. Like, did I go at all in December? I feel like maybe like the first week or two.
But then you were driving to Oregon and back.
Yeah, my mom was here. Yeah. So I'm kind of getting back into it after a little break. And, you know, that's always a little hard. Like, yeah. The first couple workouts back, you're like, oh, I'm weak.
Yes. Or I like to reframe it as, wow, I can really feel like I got a hard workout without doing too much.
So that's where I'm at. Beginning again.
Well, it is the time of year for that. And also, I support everyone not doing workout challenges. One of my friends who's doing this challenge as of this recording, as we're 6 days in, has yet to do a workout because she had COVID, poor thing. I think it's really good to do these things, but not do them in a overly obsessive way. Yeah. And I have a low-key goal for myself this year of improving my flexibility. I really would like to have an easier time getting off of the floor.
Is that related to flexibility or not?
I think it's a combination of flexibility and strength.
Hmm.
I do know if I think more about my glute muscles, I can get off the floor more easily. But there is like a reaching and I don't know. There's mobility for sure involved. And I feel like as I've been getting stronger, I've also been getting a little stiffer.
Yeah.
And getting off the floor is hard.
Yeah, it is.
It's really hard. And it's not like a moral imperative, but yeah. I end up on the floor a lot because I have kids. So I would like it to be easier to get off of that position. It's not like I'm just in a yoga pose on the floor.
Yeah, I'm totally.
In an awkward crouch and then I can't like get myself out of it easily. That's what I want to work on.
Maybe you need to get rid of all your furniture.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. That's what we'll do. Yep. Get rid of our furniture.
I was thinking because sometimes I sit on the floor when I'm watching TV. I don't know why. It's just more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should just get rid of all my furniture.
Yeah, probably. That's the next logical step.
If I'm not sitting on the couch while I watch TV.
But make sure to keep it in your like yes. neighbor's house or your in-law's house.
My auxiliary house,
right.
Yeah.
You can go work on it during the day.
Mm-hmm.
For folks who are like, what are they talking about? This is a reference to an episode we did where we looked at is everything a diet? And we looked at an article, I believe it was in Dwell, by a man who had given up all of his furniture in service of his family's health. And we're here to say you don't have to do that. Chairs are great. Yeah, we'll link back to it. Okay, the other thing I wanted to tell you about is my new orange tree.
Wow. This is an indoor tree, I'm assuming?
It's an indoor tree. It's my favorite thing I got for Christmas. My mom got me an orange tree. And my 8-year-old has named it Olive Piper. So it is Olive Piper the tree.
Olive the orange tree.
Yeah, don't overthink it. It has 2 oranges on it. They're green.
Whoa.
But I'm tracking them turning orange.
That's awesome.
She has an orange tree and she's been getting lots of oranges off
Whoa.
It. And I think she has better light than I do, but I'm really optimistic. It's an exciting new thing to obsess over.
That's really exciting.
Yeah. And if we do get oranges, how thrilling will it be?
It seems like an orange tree would smell good.
It doesn't smell like anything right now, but I think maybe once the fruit ripens.
Or I guess I was thinking of flowers. But
oh, yeah, or when there's flowers. Yeah, at this point, it's in the fruiting stage. I don't know. If anyone does indoor citrus, hit me up with your tips because I don't know a lot about its, like, life cycle. I'm worried about how much to water it, all that kind of stuff. But it's super satisfying.
I wonder if in the summer you can put it outside.
Well, my mom strongly advised against it. Apparently, she tried that, and it was like an orange tree crisis. That the citrus trees, they're prone to bugs and funguses. And so if it's happy where it is, just keep it happy. It's pretty big, too.
Oh, okay.
So I have it in a pretty big pot.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a new project. We're not quite to where it's time to start thinking about seed starting. So I'm really trying to give my houseplants some love right now for my garden itch.
Should we do some questions?
Let's do some listener questions.
All right. The first one is, what should I say to a friend when they are complaining about their own body?
Oh, these are always such annoying moments. Truly just annoyed for you.
I think there's like 2 sides here. One side is like, it's clearly bothering you.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side is also just like empathizing with your friend who's clearly having a hard time. I think you kind of need to balance how much it's bothering you with how much it's bothering them. Like, do you want to just set a hard boundary? Like, I'd rather not talk about this. Or do you want to be like, that's really hard. My body bothers me sometimes too.
How much do you think it matters the relative body sizes of the friends?
I think if it's someone smaller than you, it might be triggering to you in a different way. And you might be more wanting to just set a boundary versus someone who's, like, bigger than you complaining about their body.
Yeah, I think it does matter. I think if it's someone smaller than you, it's okay to say, hey, I'm sorry you're having a hard time, but I am not the person for this conversation. Like, wish you well with that, but I'm not the person for this. If it's someone bigger than you, I don't want to invalidate your own struggles with your body, but if you can understand it more from the perspective of they experience bias and stigma that you don't deal with, and find empathy for it is harder for them to navigate seating or doctors or clothing access, et cetera. So I think that has to play into it.
There's also, like, layers of privilege with this stuff that you might not know about. Like, a thinner person could also be more disabled than you, or, you know, like, transgender or a person of color.
Good point.
I don't know. It's complicated. Also, there's no details in this question. Like, what are they complaining about?
I assume weight, but I assume if they sent it to us, it's weight.
Maybe they're complaining about, like, my butt is too big for this chair, or, like, people stare at me when I do XYZ thing versus just, like, I have flabby muffin top or whatever.
Right. Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think if someone is just denigrating their body, that is harder to absorb as a friend than someone who's like, I'm talking about what something's difficult in my lived experience of my body.
Yeah, totally.
But on the other hand, of course, people do really struggle emotionally with feeling negative about how their body looks. So
totally.
I'm not saying they don't deserve a place to vent about that. But if their venting requires the use of anti-fat language, if your best friend is New York Times restaurant reviewer Pete Wells, I think you should set a boundary and say, Pete, I don't want to hear about how you lost the weight of a basset hound.
Oh, my God.
If the only way they can talk about their struggle is to invoke anti-fat rhetoric and language, I think you should set a boundary.
I think that's a good way of talking about it. Like, what are they complaining about? Is it anti-fat or is it just something else?
The next question is a very fun one. Please tell us about your pets, including their names and origin stories.
I'll go first because I only have one pet. I have a dog named Bunny. I've had her for almost 10 years and she's around 11. I got her from the shelter in Albuquerque when I moved here, or not long after I moved here. I had been knowing I wanted a dog, and I was living in a bunch of situations where I was not allowed to have a dog. So as soon as I entered a situation where I was, I got a dog. She's like a pit bull. She was a scrawny little shelter dog. And now she's kind of entering her old ladyhood.
Yeah, 11. Wow.
Yeah, I love her. She's also kind of bad. She's not great with other dogs, not great with, like, smaller creatures in general. Oh. But yeah, she's my dog, so.
She's allowed to have preferences and feelings about the world. That's fair. I admire Bunny from afar. When Corinne drives to Maine, I'm always like, come and stay on your way to Maine in New York. She's like, our dogs can't be friends. We haven't figured that out yet.
Also chickens.
Well, the chickens are in a coop. I mean, it's easy to keep Bunny away from the chickens.
Okay.
I promise. Okay. Speaking of, yes, I have chickens.
How many pets do you have, would you say?
I currently oversee, I manage a flock of 13 animals.
Wow. Does that include the chickens?
That includes 8 chickens. Okay. I would like to underscore that I am a cat person. Who would be happy owning one cat? 1 to 2 cats is to me the correct number of pets. Okay. I do like dogs. I am much more of a dog person now that I have a dog. But they are so much more work than cats. It's not even funny. It's not the same conversation at all. And if I had my, you know, a different life, I would be a 1 to 2 cat person.
Okay.
However, I have a child who is an animal whisperer. Like, truly, that is her love language. That is her passion. That is her whole world. And you're supposed to really try to encourage your children's interests. And so somehow now I have 1,000 pets. when the kids were born, we had, at the time, three cats, three old man cats that were, like, dying off in their early childhood. And then once we were down to one cat, we got the dog. We have a Bernedoodle named Penelope. So at that point, we had the dog, a cat named Walter, and a fish tank. And when we divorced, I said, I will keep the dog, and Walter, the cat who hates the dog and children, will go to their dad's house, and the fish tank went to their dad's house, too. Oh, I'm sorry. We also had a leopard gecko at that point, so I kept the gecko. And I've talked before on the podcast the story of Blue the gecko. I won't go into it now, but Blue the gecko did disappear for a while, so we adopted a second gecko, and now we have two geckos, Blue and Cat.
Yes.
And the dog, Penelope. And then...
What is the lifespan of a gecko?
It's like 25 years. I didn't know that when I got a gecko.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. No, Blue and Cat and I are in it for the long haul.
Whoa.
Unless Violet can take them to college. Unclear. Something we talk about. They can live a really long time. But I will say, they are very low-maintenance pets when they're not lost in your house. They just, like, sleep in their tanks all day, and you feed them waxworms every couple of days. It's no work.
Okay.
Compared to a dog, it's fine.
Yeah.
They're less work than a cat. So for a while, we were a household of just dog and geckos. And then the kids convinced me to adopt two kittens. So we added Licorice and Cheese, our two cats.
Aww.
And Cheese is my favorite of all of the pets, and I tell all the other pets this all the time because I'm always hoping to inspire them to be more like Cheese. Cheese is the most laid-back cat. He's like, you do you. I'm fine. I'll come and curl up next to you, but I'm not in your business. I don't create drama. I don't create interspecies drama like Penelope and Licorice are always working stuff out.
Oh,
Cheese is my favorite child. Everyone knows this. And then, after we were at, really at indoor pet capacity, I would say, with the five, the two geckos, the two cats, and the dog, Jack came into our lives, and he really encouraged my 12-year-old's passion for chickens, and now we have the eight chickens.
Wow.
And the chickens do have names. Let me see if I can do it. Pom Pom, Turkey, Shiva the Destroyer, Lord Peanut of Doom, Peggy, Alex, Lily, and somebody else. Oh, Thomas J. Finnegers.
Okay, great names.
Finnegans.
Will you be getting any other animals?
No.
Ask your children?
I say no.
Okay.
But I cannot with confidence. I mean, for sure, if we have a casualty, there will be a strong argument for replacement. I have held firm on no second dog because as much as I love Penelope, they are so much work and I don't want that. And I don't think anyone wants another cat because, I mean, we make Jack do the cat litter now that he's here. Like, none of us were real enthusiastic about litter box cleaning. So
that's
the one downside of cats.
Yeah.
I'm here for anyone whose kids are pet curious. I don't think reptiles are actually great pets because they are not very interactive or interesting.
Yeah.
This is an unpopular position, but I think if you're inclined to go reptile and you live in a neighborhood where you can do it, chickens are a better option.
Hmm.
They are also tiny dinosaurs, and you get eggs, and they're more fun and interactive.
That makes sense.
And about the same work-wise. They're not a ton of work. Also, just be a cat person, though. I mean, it's fine. Nobody needs this many pets. But they do bring us a lot of joy.
All right. Well, on to the next topic question. Do I need to buy a sex pillow? Instagram keeps making me think I do. Not sure if they are size inclusive.
I think you do. You don't need to buy one off Instagram. But we learned this from Brianna Campos when she came on to do our fat sex episode, that they are definitely size inclusive and a really good option for fat sex.
Yeah, I feel like if you're wondering about it, why not? At the very least, you have something to try out and see if you like it.
See if you're into it. I wonder if Instagram keeps sending this person the same one they send me, which is like a very high-end linen sex pillow.
Oh, wow.
Called Taboo.
I'm not getting advertised this.
Well, you will now. I've been curious about it. I've been seeing the ads.
I would definitely look into whether it's size inclusive, maybe see if there are reviews from anyone or how strong the foam is.
Are we worried about strength of it, like, getting flattened? Or are we worried about width? Like, you don't want to feel like something's narrow. Like, you don't want it to feel like a yoga block underneath you. So maybe check some measurements. But I think there's got to be some good fat-friendly sex pillows out there, because the sex wedge is really helpful for working it out with bodies when bellies and they, you know, like, it gives you new angles to get to. We say go forth and report back and let us know.
Go for it.
Okay, I will read the last question. Hi, I am wondering if you find that personal responsibility vis-a-vis sustainability to be a diet ever. For example, pledging to do something to help the planet in absolute terms. I will never ever drink bottled water, I will never buy a new article of clothing, etc. It seems blasphemous to say personal responsibility efforts towards sustainability is a diet, but I'd be curious to hear your and Corinne's thoughts on it. Thank you for being such an awesome podcast newsletter journalist and creating wonderful content. Thank you so much. Oh, and then they added on, I think it's great and necessary to take steps to reduce, reuse, recycle, have a smaller footprint, use resources responsibly and sustainably. But sometimes the rigidity of people's rules around this and the moralizing feel familiar to diet culture.
I do think it can be a diet. It's one of those things where you kind of have to find the sweet spot between it feeling like a restrictive diet and not being so jaded that you do nothing. Not being like, I will never ever drink bottled water, but also not throwing every plastic bottle you encounter in the landfill.
I think anytime we're absolute about something, we start to enter into perfectionist territory, which goes diety fast. If by diet we mean using a set of external rules to judge yourself, setting high standards that are impossible to achieve realistically in your life, deciding there's an arbitrary standard of goodness that you're measuring yourself by. All those things we've talked about is like the components by how like burnt toast defines a diet. I can see showing up here. And it doesn't mean, like you're saying, the actual impetus to want to live more sustainably is problematic. I think it's that we are so used to feeling like if we're doing something, there's one right way to do it, that we apply a diet lens to this topic. It's sort of ironic, right? Because the whole goal is to live more sustainably, and there is nothing less sustainable than a diet.
I've definitely felt this way about the kind of sustainability fashion conversation sometimes, where people are like, there's absolutely no excuse for, you know, shopping from fast fashion brands.
Budget, accessibility,
maybe. And size. Yeah, like, have you ever been a size 26 and needed a pair of pants immediately?
I can think of so many excuses or just reasons why you need to shop there. And I just think anytime we remove the possibility for gray areas, we remove the ability for something to be sustainable. I also think a lot of the steps that people take towards sustainability and get really obsessive about doing like one right way are not necessarily the things we most need to happen to save the planet, right? What we really need is big legislative change, industry regulation, like all these big things. And it's not to say that personal choices don't matter, but you becoming overly rigid about bottled water is not going to make or break anything. So how is it useful? How is it getting you towards the goal? At what cost? So I think that's another thing, is if we're always kind of moving the goalpost on what's enough here, that's not useful. Not to say don't do some of these things, but the absolutism, I see it all the time. And I think a lot of times people start those projects and are not able to sustain them. And I say this as someone who regularly feels like she's not doing nearly enough for the planet. So I'm not saying I've got it figured out.
Totally.
There's certainly more I could be doing.
Well, we made a podcast.
I think we did that. Corinne, what's your butter?
Okay, my butter is something which I also just recommended on Big Undies, but it is called Ponaris. Kind of guessing on how you say it. And it is a nasal emollient. So it is like a little glass bottle with a dropper that is filled with oil and like minty herbs or something.
Beef tallow?
I mean, yeah. and you drop it up your nose and it like immediately drips down the back of your throat and clears everything out.
Oh.
It feels amazing.
Okay.
Someone recommended it on the Big Undies Fall Must-Haves post. Last week, I just like reached a tipping point where I was like, my legs are scaly. My sinuses are like,
I was becoming a lizard.
A desert inside of me. And so I ordered like new lotion, Ponaris. Anyways, apparently it was developed by NASA for astronauts to use in space as part of their first aid kit.
Oh my God, that's science,
if you've ever heard of it.
And good enough for the astronauts' noses. Yeah. So it's good enough for my nose.
And it is like it's a little bit, I do feel like it's really making a difference.
Well, I totally want to try it. Totally want to say that this is like your second Maha adjacent recommendation.
Ugh. Is this one Maha adjacent? I was thinking this was more like Solar Shield.
Oh, okay. It's in the woo-woo supplement territory.
Okay. Well, yeah.
It's like we're getting into like ear candling. People are going to be I love
ear candling. Is that Maha?
I don't know.
It's that I'm like ear candling is crunchy hippie.
Right. But it's the crunchy hippie that then circles back around a Maha. Like, we're concerned and we're checking.
Thank you for your concern.
Well, to make you feel better, my butter is also going to be a weird nasal supplement.
Oh, amazing. Wow. Clearly our noses are suffering. We did not plan this.
No, but when you said yours, I was like, I know what I'll do.
Okay.
Okay, mine. It's also perfect because this is the pets episode. Mine is a weird supplement I'm giving my cats so I won't be allergic to them.
Whoa, does that work?
I can't believe I'm saying this, but yes, it seems to be really working, question mark.
What is it?
Okay, it's a brand called Packagen.
Okay.
It's a chicken-flavored powder, and you sprinkle a little on the top of your cat's food, and they claim... I guess this too is science, ? They claim that it changes the protein in your cat's saliva. Whoa. And that's what we're allergic to. And cats like lick their fur everywhere. So that's why you react to cat fur.
Huh.
I, despite being an avowed cat person, am allergic to cats. Ooh. I live in a lot of denial about it because I love them and wish to have cats and don't wish to acknowledge the cat allergy that I live with. But I was reaching a point last fall where I was like, I mean, I am definitely really allergic to my cats. Oh. Every time I pet them, my eyes are streaming and I wake up with a stuffy nose all the time. Is it sleep apnea? Is it cat allergies? Who knows? Anyway, someone on Instagram influenced me to try this because she claimed it totally worked for her. And I was like, whatever, we'll try it. And both Jack and I, within like 2 weeks, were like, oh my God, we're really a lot less allergic and I can pet the cat now and not have an immediate reaction.
Wow, that's amazing.
Now, a couple of caveats. It's quite expensive. I'm locked in now, but it's, I forget what a month, like $60 a month or something. Like it's not nothing, especially because I have two cats, so I need to buy like multiple things. Mm. And that comes in these little teeny bottles. My family, who are all much more cat allergic than me, when they visited for Christmas, were still like, you're crazy. We're still allergic to your cats.
Oh, so interesting.
I don't know what level of allergy severity it works for. I would have described my allergy as mild to moderate. Okay. But also, I don't know. Maybe they were having colds or something. You know, nasal stuff is very mysterious. It's very hard to nail down what's causing it. So we don't know. It's working well enough that I'm going to keep buying it for the lifespan of these cats, I guess. And we'll see it as long as I feel like it's still working. It's something to try because otherwise I was like, am I at the allergy shot stage? And that felt like a whole big project. I hope this is helpful information for anyone else whose nose is dry and stuffy. You can put oil in it and you can feed your cat something weird.
Amazing.
All right. Thank you all for listening. We would love to know what is new with you and what you're putting in your nose. Take that in whatever direction you want. Tell us in the comments. Make sure to rate and review us in your podcast player and tell friends where they can listen for breaking news about nasal substances.
Oh my God.
Today's Indulgence Gospel was produced and hosted by Corinne and me. You can follow me on Instagram at V_Soulsmith. You can follow Corinne Fay at Selfie Fay and subscribe to Big Undies on Patreon.
The Burnt Toast logo is by Deanna Lowe. Our theme music is by Faraday, and Tommy Heron is our audio engineer. Thanks for listening and supporting anti-diet body liberation journalism.